Hey, this is Pertles and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Travis and Lisa. And today we're talking about the power to walk on water. What if you had the power to walk on water? Where would you go? What would you do?
Who would you go see? I'd go to the ocean.
Well, it doesn't mean like you're going to camp on there. What are you going to do? Like you get halfway out there and be like,
I guess I'll go back.
Go fishing. Get some good spots.
So you'd be fishing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You'd be fishing, too?
No, I wouldn't be fishing. I was trying to think of what I would do. I don't know what I would do. I don't know that I would find that a useful superpower.
I think I would. I'd freak people out all the time.
If you had speed with it.
You'd
have to have speed with it, like those lizards that can do it and run real fast.
Oh, yeah. Or like that kid in Incredibles, Dash. Yeah. He runs so fast, he's walking on water.
Yeah. Well, Jesus does that miracle, and he defies the physics of it, and we kind of go, whoa, that's cool. Like, why did he do this? And so that's what we're going to try to answer today, is why did Jesus walk on the water? What was the reason behind that? It's kind of one of those Sunday school stories that every kid has probably heard. It's actually a part of our American culture. One of my favorite movies is Tombstone. I love that movie. Doc Hollywood is, they ask him, where's Wyatt? And he says, his response is great. He's down by the creek, probably walking on water. And like, you're just kind of like, Hollywood kind of expects you to know that story. It's just kind of it's kind of ingrained into our culture. But the question is why did Jesus walk on the water? I don't think it was like, he's just walking by the guys and like, hey, look what I can do. It wasn't to go fishing. It wasn't to scare people, even though he does scare people. So why in the world would he walk on water? Well, one of the things that you have to do in the text is like, this story is in three of the four Gospels. And it's always positioned right after he feeds 5,000 with, what is it, 5 loaves and 2 fish? And so he breaks it and they eat so much there. It's like the first old country buffet. They eat so much. It's just like, you know, they have 12 baskets left over type of a thing. But then he tells this story, or Mark tells it. The Gospels tell this, and they have this story of Jesus going off, and he goes up and he prays, and he sends the disciples across in a boat. And so in Mark chapter 6, Lisa, do you want to read 45? You want to read the story, and then we'll kind of just unpack it?
Sure. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened.
So the disciples are out in the middle of the lake. This lake is about 4 miles across. And on a normal day, normal condition, it takes about 4 hours to row across it. Jesus was closing up shop, and he had been healing people, speaking to people, and he sent them across, and he was the one kind of dismissing the crowds that you see in the text. And then he goes up, and he's praying to his heavenly Father. He goes up on top of this mountain. He goes away from them, and the disciples are in this dark, black place at this point, because it says that later that night. In another text, it'll tell you exactly what it was. It was like the third watch, which is between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., I believe. And I think it's really fascinating here in the text that somehow, how does Jesus see him? Like, how can he see that far? Number one, it's dark out.
That's the superpower I want.
You want to be able to see? I don't know if you do, but
oh,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
But he's able to see them. He sees they've been rowing. It's like it's like 6 to 8 hours they've been rowing at this point. So these guys are beast. Can you think of rowing 6 to 8 hours?
Well, they were all fueled up on bread and fish too. No,
they did. Their tummies were satisfied, as the text tells us. He saw the disciples there straining at the oars because the wind was against them. And they're 2 miles out. They're struggling against it. And I was thinking about the picture that Mark is trying to paint here. Do you ever feel like the universe is just kind of like working against you?
Yes.
You ever have one of those days? Yeah. Just
yes.
Just where it just feels like, man, everything is going against you.
The day where my toilet was clogged and my dogs ate the M&Ms, it was a rough day.
A rough day. Yeah. It wasn't. Your dogs didn't clog the toilet, did they?
No, they did not. That would be some amazing dogs. You have
pretty fancy dogs.
Yeah, I'm a very good dog trainer.
Yeah. But I think that there's days like that where we just, like, we can't catch up to our schedule. There's just, like, the toilet's overflowing with stuff and dogs are throwing up, I'm imagining. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, this is, like, everything is going wrong today. But then there's also days where it's like the bills keep mounting up no matter how hard we work. There's health issues. Everything keeps like just piling up. And it seems like there's nothing that you can do. There's nothing that you can change. Maybe it's a relationship where it goes nowhere no matter how hard you try. And you're straining at the oars and the wind refuses to blow at your back for just like a moment. And that's what the disciples are experiencing in this moment. And then you have Jesus seeing them and he begins to walk toward them. And the text actually says that he's walking toward them and he intends to pass them by, which is another weird thing. So why is Jesus walking on the water? Well, he has to get to him. Like, that's like my first thought is like, oh, he's got to get to him. But I don't think that's really the reason. He's revealing something to them because in verse 52, it says, for they had not understood the loaves. They just come off of the feeding of the 5,000, the first corral type experience. And you see them. That their hearts were hardened. They didn't understand who he was. And so he's revealing something about himself in the midst of this text. And so he runs, I don't know if he ran, but he's walking at least on the water. And he's doing this so that, not to impress the disciples, but he's doing this so they can see who he is. And I think there's just a beautiful picture in that. And who is he? Well, he's God. And he's trying to reveal to him, like, you're hanging out with God. I am God in the bod. And they do not understand who he is. They understand he has power. He's healed people at this point. He's fed 5,000. He's done miracles. But he's revealing something about himself in this. And what he's revealing, I think, in the midst of this is who he really is. In Genesis 1:2, it says, now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. Kind of sounds like the disciples' situation at this point, right? Like, it's just wavy. It's dark. And they're kind of sitting in this darkness. And the Spirit was hovering over the waters. Then God triumphs over the dark waters of chaos and shapes them into this beautiful creation. Jesus is there in that moment. He's there in creation. He is God. And now he's walking on water and there's this picture of this rescue. There's this picture of him coming into the midst of us. Later in Exodus, Israel escapes slavery and only to find themselves kind of trapped. The Egyptians are coming back and they're coming after him. Then chariots of Pharaoh are advancing on one side and there's this water that's in front of them, the Red Sea's in front of them. But God once again triumphs over the water and he opens the sea so that Israel can pass through. And so these pictures of water and this rescue and it is always kind of there. And then in Job, it says that he alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. Well, who is the he? It's Jesus. It's all through the scriptures. There's this picture. Jesus is revealing himself as the Lord over creation and the Redeemer. And he's going out after them so that they can see who he is.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And it's remarkable to me that as he's revealing himself as God, what he reveals himself as is the only God who turns toward his people. I guess, and I was just thinking of the ways that we maybe like fill our minds or lives with lesser gods. And those gods, because they cannot satisfy, are frequently like the waves receding from us. They are turning away. We are chasing after them, but we have a God who does not recede from us. He actually goes towards us and then fills us and satisfies us in a way that lesser gods could not. And I think that's really beautiful.
And I think that's a super cool point, because you look back in chapter 4 when Jesus calmed the storm, they were afraid that this tempest was going on all around them and that they were going to die, and Jesus was just chilling like a villain taking a nap. And now here, again, we find them afraid, and Jesus meets them in the thing that they're afraid of.
He is the thing that they're afraid of.
He is, right? But, yeah. But they're also just, like, they're in this, like just rowing for hours and hours.
That same water, it's windy, so I imagine there's wave. Mm-hmm. There's waves there. He is using that as steps for them to come to him, well, him to come to them.
Yeah.
Like, he's meeting them in that thing.
They don't go to him. Yeah, he goes to them.
Well, in their fear, in the midst of their fear.
And they don't know, they know that he's on land. They're in the middle of this thing. They don't even think to call out to him. That's the other part of this. They don't even think to call out to him. And he goes to them, which is, in my mind, kind of blows my mind. Like the imagery there that he goes to them. He goes to try to rescue them. But then there's that weird part that it says that Jesus went out to them walking on the lake, walking on the water. He was about to pass them by, but then they saw him. Like, it strikes me odd that the disciples are straining there, they're struggling. Why would Jesus even think about walking right by them? You know, like, you read the scriptures and you're like, you know, the Good Samaritan at least stops, right? Like what? Jesus is like, yo, I'm over here, like, and just cruising by. Like, what is this? Well, again, I think it's revealing something of who he is. It's revealing his character. And he's revealing this picture of who God is. So if you know the Old Testament and read about Moses, God gives Moses this unique privilege of seeing a glimpse of him. And it's in Exodus 33 and 34. And Moses, basically what he says is, hey, God, can you show me your glory? And God's like, no, I can't, because if you see my face, you're going to die. And he goes, but what I'm going to do is I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, or this would be that word there, the Lord, it means Yahweh or I am, is what he says to him. And in your presence, I will show you all my goodness. When my glory passes, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I pass by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen. So this is the picture of Moses. And then you see Jesus, he's walking on the water. They're terrified. And it says, but they saw him walking on the water, on the lake, and they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out because they saw him and they were terrified. But then Jesus says something. He says, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Jesus utters three short sentences. He says, take courage. He says, don't be afraid. And then he says, it is I. This sentence can be translated, this I, it is I, what he's saying here is, I am.
So cool.
Isn't that cool?
So cool.
Like, he's saying, I am. He's saying the exact same, that same thing that Moses, what God said to Moses, I am the Lord. He says, I am. Jesus saying, I am to them, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's the same, you know, phrase that God uses for Moses when he sees the burning bush, if you know that story. He sees the burning bush. He says, I am. And he says, you're about to walk on holy ground type of a deal. And I just think this is just incredible because Jesus is revealing his divinity, that he is God. I am, is what he's telling them. And there's some similarities between Moses and the disciples in the stories. But there's also some things that are really, really different. Like, God reveals his divinity to Moses, but Moses was walking when he sees this. He's like walking in the best manner possible, right? He's walking in obedience. He's walking in this perfect faith. He has this intimacy and obedience with God. But when Jesus reveals his divinity to the disciples, they were not believing. They didn't even know who he was. They didn't understand the last miracle that he did. They had little faith in the midst of this. They didn't think he could get to them. They don't ever even cry out to him. They're just rowing. They're just in, just kind of sitting in this futile, you know, position of row, row, row your boat for 8 hours. And they never cry out to Jesus, and he walks out to them, and he goes there. And the reality is they didn't even think to do it because they thought he was too far off. And they were unbelieving. And Jesus walks to them in their unbelief, in their doubt, in their inability to know that he could get to them. And I don't know, for me, that is just an incredible picture of, in the darkness, in the struggle, Jesus walks to them.
And it's the same picture of the cross, like in the struggle of humanity with sin and separation from God, Jesus takes on the hard work. He takes on all of the punishment. He takes on everything that we could need and everything that we deserve. And he puts it on and says, I'm going to do the work, which I think is, it's such a cool, beautiful picture.
Yeah.
And the idea that they didn't even think to cry out for him.
Yeah.
And he was making his way there anyway.
And he walks there. They're terrified. And he says, I am. I'm God. And he doesn't pass them by. He gets in the boat with them. That's verse 51. He gets in the boat. He didn't pass them by like he passed by Moses, but he reveals himself to them. It's like the face of God is right in front of these guys.
Yeah, and he didn't, like, he could have easily just, like, changed the direction and went on his way, right? Like, the direction of the wind. We already saw him just last chapter calm the storm completely. So it's not like he couldn't have just simply changed the wind. Rather than changing the wind pattern, he rides in the boat with them, which is amazing. I mean, something they didn't ask for. Yeah.
Well, and then you get to that place where it's like the disciples don't understand what it meant when Jesus, you know, fed the crowd, the crowd of like 20,000 people. Like, they don't understand it. And it's kind of like the Moses story, right? God fed Moses and the Israelites. He fed them with his bread called manna in the desert for 40 years. But John 6:33 says, for the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Jesus just broke the bread and he gave it to this crowd. Jesus, what he's explaining to them is that he is the bread of life. Jesus' body was about to be broken on the cross so that they may be made whole, that they may have this eternal life. This is the new exodus from, not from slavery in Egypt, but from slavery of sin and death. And it's accomplished through Jesus. And he's trying to explain this to them in these two parables. And the disciples thought that Jesus had walked up the mountain and had forsaken them, but he didn't. He was willing to walk on the water to meet them in their silly rowing of their boat going nowhere. He met them in such a way that those who were once unbelieving, those who didn't understand, the scripture says that their hearts were hardened. He met them in such a way for them to say, we now believe. We have come to know that you are the Holy One. You are the Messiah. You are the Christ. You are God. You are the I am that I need. And I am amazed by that story.
Yeah, and there wasn't, the thing that's truly remarkable to me also is that it wasn't like a crisis for them. I mean, they were just like in the middle of an everyday thing that was pretty frustrating. Mm-hmm. And God shows up, Jesus shows up as God and says, that's remarkable to me too. How often it is that I'm in the middle of the day with the clogged toilet and the whatever. And I, you know, actually that day I did pray to Jesus and it was very cool. God remarkably helped me and my kids got to see that. But often when I'm struggling with the boat, I don't think, oh, gee, I should call out to Jesus to help me right here. But he knows that we're struggling and he shows up as God and he reveals himself to us in that way with such power. It's just amazing. It's truly an amazing story.
Well, the other part of it is if he's willing to walk on water for you, to walk up the hill of Calvary, to die on a cross for you, then it seems like we can trust him in the rowing of our boats. In the fear and the frustrations of our storms, our darkness, our imperfection. And he will walk on water into our boat and show us his goodness and his glory. I think that's just good news you can use.
Thanks for hanging out with us this week. If you guys have questions or you've got a topic you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to me, travis@evangelup.org. If you want to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or go to our website, evangelup.org.